Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin DNR. Preventing food waste and composting scraps and uneaten veggies, grains, and fruit can help the environment. More dnr.wi.gov by searching food waste.
Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences. Itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Republicans are revving up the fight over Obamacare following the resignation of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius last week. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 15th. We'll talk with a guest political scientist who worked for Sebelius when she was the governor of Kansas. We'll talk about her resignation, her successor, and the election year politics of the Affordable Care Act. After the rocky enrollment period, is it off now to a decent start in terms of enrollment? Should Republicans get on board or help make it better rather than trying to outright repeal it? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Burdette Loomis, professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He worked for Sebelius when she was governor of Kansas. He's also a graduate of UW-Madison. Good morning, and thanks for joining us again.
Nice to be here, Joy.
Well, any surprise to you that Kathleen Sebelius resigned last Friday?
I think that the only surprise to people here who knew her fairly well, and I know her reasonably well, but I've got good friends who are very close confidants of hers, is that we didn't have any idea of the timing. I don't think it's surprising that after 5 years, and particularly this last 1 year, she would decide to leave. But there was no inkling, at least in terms of our understanding, that she would make the decision when she did. And obviously it had been planned over several months. But without any question, you know, she was a vulnerable person. She took some responsibility for the rollout fiasco. And so at some point, between that and just the tough 5 years that any HHS secretary would have, it was probably time for her to go.
Do you read anything into the timing of the announcement 1 week after the administration announced it signed up more than 7 million people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when she saw that it was going to go well, I think that she and Obama negotiated the timing that they could claim, despite all the rough early rollout elements of this, they could claim victory, and she could go out, I think, with some degree of confidence that the Affordable Health Care Act was going to work.
Yeah, and here, Kathleen Sebelius is on Meet the Press on Sunday, talking about the Affordable Care Act under her tenure.
The launch of the website was terribly flawed and terribly difficult. The good news was that we said it would be fixed in 8 weeks. It was fixed in 8 weeks, and we announced last week that 7.5 million people, most of them coming through the site, had enrolled.
So if the program is in much better shape now, and why doesn't Sebelius get credit for fixing the problems?
I think that if we look out, if we're looking back on this from 5 or 7 or 10 years, she may. But this has become so politicized over the last 5 years that nothing's going to keep it from being politicized now. And so even in the wake of the 7.5, you have questions about how many were new enrollees, how many are going to pay, things of this nature, that coming from Republicans. And then Democrats, of course, will say, look, Republicans in various states and at the national level have made this extraordinarily difficult to implement. This remains a political issue more than a policy issue, and I think it will for at least a while.
Yeah. So did Sebelius have to go, given the politics?
I don't think she had to go, no. I think that it would have been perfectly possible for her to stay on. But I think even in the few days since then, we'll see what happens with her replacement, Burwell, being confirmed. I think that she is less so than Obama, but still she's very much a lightning rod. And so in that sense, I don't think she had to go, but in the end, it may be better for the president and for the implementation of Obamacare for this to happen.
What do you know about her successor, or at least the proposed successor, Sylvia Matthews Burwell?
I really don't know that much about her, and I think that's really the point. She's clearly had substantial administrative experience both in the private and public sector. She is not a public figure by any stretch of the imagination. She's worked with the Gates Foundation, for example, but she's been clearly competent at running fairly large bureaucracies, and I think she's kind of a typical late second administration appointee, someone who I think Obama feels can get confirmed. She's already been confirmed once, and someone who can administer the program, doesn't have necessarily to sell it, but will keep it going down the road. So in many ways, I think she's a pretty smart replacement.
Yeah. Confirmed once as budget director.
Right.
Yeah. And but isn't the Affordable Care Act a different animal when it comes to the politics?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. I mean, this is as toxic an issue as I've seen in looking at politics in 30 or 40 years. Not only was the passage very difficult, but remarkably, the politics of implementation have been so contentious at both the state and the national level that it really has been, I think, a unique policy experience, and one that's really not doesn't help the policy at all. I mean, you have so much opposition in so many states to this, to the enrollment, to even helping healthcare.gov, to say nothing of setting up healthcare exchanges. So the resistance to this policy was truly remarkable.
Yeah. But you expect that she will be confirmed as Health and Human Services Secretary?
Yeah, I do. I think that the hearings will, in all likelihood, provide one more stage for the political theater of bashing Obamacare and defending Obamacare, and we'll have the usual storylines run out. But yeah, I think that President Obama will get his nominee. She may find that becoming HHS secretary is a little more bruising than becoming the budget director, but I think that she was chosen because I think she can be confirmed.
So how much work is left for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act? What hurdles remain?
Well, I think you've got the whole question of pricing in the next round. We'll see. There are some further implementation issues. And remember, this policy, as it was passed by the Congress, as often happens with policies, much of this policy was, in a sense, labeled to be determined later. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that Secretary Sebelius, along with the White House, had to do almost from the beginning, was make decisions about policy as it was implemented. It's not as if the Congress gave the government, gave Sebelius, gave Obama a perfect roadmap. They had lots and lots of policy and political choices to make, and clearly they made them, and they made some that the Congress didn't intend, like deferring various parts of the Affordable Health Care Act. So The idea that there's some roadmap and you just implement it is a little mistaken. And I think that what we're going to see over the next 2 years, 4 years, 6 years is a continual kind of modification of the affordable health care. This is a huge experiment. And I don't think anybody felt that it was going to end up being static, that they knew what the answers were, because there are so many moving parts. It's so complex. As we go forward, there will be continuing modifications to this, I think, in terms of how it works. And honestly, I think everyone expected that. But it means it will remain certainly a political football for some time to come.
We are discussing the election year politics of the Affordable Care Act in the wake of the resignation of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and the nomination of her successor, Sylvia Matthews-Burwell. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions. You just heard our guest, Burdette Loomis, professor of political science at the University of Kansas, saying that the upcoming confirmation hearings for Burwell will be a bash or defend fest of Obamacare. Do you want to bash or defend Obamacare? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And what do you think? Do you think that Republicans are right to continue to rev up their opposition of Obamacare and insist that that Obamacare be repealed, or do you want to see Republicans working on all of these modifications that will be needed over time? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about the future of the Affordable Care Act, following the resignation of the former HHS Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, and the nomination of her predecessor on Friday, and welcoming your thoughts, your questions on the future of Obamacare. Republicans are revving up the fight over Obamacare following Kathleen Sebelius's resignation. We are talking about the election year politics of the Affordable Care Act with Burdette Loomis, professor of political science at the University of Kansas, who worked for Kathleen Sebelius when she was governor of Kansas. He's also a graduate of UW-Madison. Let's go to Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Good morning. I would like to hear some history of the Romney Care package when it first started in Massachusetts and how it went along, or were there troubles, the same type of troubles in that state as they're finding in states around here.
Do you know, Professor Loomis,
I'm not a great expert on that, but I think that it's a state that you have to remember where the rates of insurance are quite high to begin with. It's an affluent state, and I think it was supported by pretty much all quarters. You had a Republican governor embarking upon something that most Democrats agreed with. And so although there might have been some administrative twitches here and there, I think the overall commitment to it was much greater, and I think it rolled out somewhat more smoothly. That said, I mean, the costs, I think, were higher than they'd expected, but certainly by any measure, the Romney Care package has been, relatively speaking, a success in Massachusetts.
Let's go next to Laverne in DeForest. Hi, Laverne.
Yeah, good morning. A quick comment about this idea that Republicans have made it difficult to implement. The law was written by Democrats. I watched a lot of the markups, both House and Senate. Just about zero amendments by the minority party were written into the law. So for the party to get its law passed and then it doesn't implement well to blame the other side is pure folly. Now,
Before you move on, Professor Loomis, are you blaming the other side for the problems in the implementation?
Not in particular. No, I think much of that. I think much of the passage, and I don't disagree with the caller. Much of the writing of the Affordable Health Care Act was to get 218 votes in the House and 60 votes in the Senate. And to do that, even though it was all Democratic votes, there were many, many moderate Democrats who had to be accommodated. And so you end up with a lot of accommodation, even though I would agree that the markups themselves were partisan. Once saying that, I mean, I live in a state with a Republican governor, a very Republican governor, and he initially took $31 million to set up an exchange here. He then returned the money, and his administration was most antagonistic to healthcare.gov. So I think that there are various levels here, and you also have a U.S. House, which has now voted 50 times to repeal Obamacare. So I think that this is a complex situation. Your caller is quite right. It really was. It was passed with Democratic votes, but it was made much more complex by all the accommodations that needed to be made to many moderates. And indeed, early on, particularly in the Senate, Republicans with Max Baucus had a fair amount of input. I think in the House, not so much.
Yeah, I've heard this argument before. The Dems rammed this down the throats of the Republicans. Laverne said no minority party amendments were accepted. Were the Republicans submitting amendments that would have worked with the Affordable Care Act concept, or were they saying we just don't want this, period?
I think that the affordable health care concept is so broad, mm-hmm, that at the end of the day, you've got to write legislation. And again, I think in the House, which is a more partisan body for the most part, Republican ideas were probably not accepted, especially. But in the Baucus negotiations, there's no question that there were a lot of modifications made early on that accommodated Republicans, because they had great hopes. Obama had hopes, and Senator Baucus, among others, had hopes that they would win a fair amount of Republican support. And that was only those hopes were only dashed at the very end as the whole policy became more and more politicized. So I think if you look back, particularly in the Senate package, which was the one that was passed, and then the House agreed to that a fair number of Republican ideas were incorporated. Plus, remember, this is a Heritage Foundation set of policies. This Obamacare was hatched in 1992-93. At the Heritage Foundation. This is a moderate Republican to conservative Republican response to Bill Clinton's health care package in 1993-94. So many of the ideas, the private sector being dominant here really, come from the conservative side of the agenda, of the policy universe.
Laverne, you wanted to say something else?
Yes. Originally it was a lot about there are so many people in this country that are uninsured. We need to get them insured. I have heard, and I would hope that maybe you could correct this if it's incorrect, that according to the Congressional Budget Office, after 10 years of implementation of the ACA, there are still going to be 30 million people uninsured in this country. It doesn't seem to me like it's a bill that is going to correct the problem that it was supposedly intended to correct.
What about that?
Well, if we wanted to have a bill that would correct that, we'd simply go to a single payer. And everybody would be covered. There'd be a tax system to do it. And we would be very much like France or Canada, Germany, what have you. Clearly, the political will isn't there to do that. And so you do a different kind of policy. I think that nobody said that there ever would you'd ever get everybody covered under this. What we've seen so far is that the rate of coverage right now the rate of non-coverage has dropped to the lowest rate for six or seven years at the very height of the boom, the 2007-2008 economic pretty much good times. So I think that between Medicaid and Obamacare, you have more people enrolled. The number of uninsured are dropping. But again, I would agree that in the end, there was always going to be X number, and 30 million is not an unreasonable number, who would be uninsured. One other thing here, in state after state after state, Republican governors have refused to expand Medicaid. And so if they had not been so resistant to bringing their population under this federal program, we'd have a lot fewer uninsured people. But again, there has been resistance in many, many, many states.
Gerhard on Facebook says, why not call things by their right names? Affordable Care Act should be called the Insurance Company Enrichment Plan. Can you give that a quick 30-second react?
We'll see, but certainly insurance companies have been major elements of this program. They've been supportive. They have rewritten their policies. They have become invested themselves. We'll see if they're enriched. Health insurance is a difficult business, but there's no question that insurance companies have become real partners of the Obama administration in this policy.
We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue to talk about the future of Obamacare, the politics surrounding the Affordable Care Act. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Tuesday, April 15th. We are talking about the election year politics of the Affordable Care Act following the resignation on Friday of Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and the nomination of her successor, Sylvia Matthews-Burwell. Last week on Fox News, Republican Senator Mike Lee predicted a partial repeal of Obamacare.
If Republicans are able to retake the majority in the Senate this November, I think significant changes can start right away, and we can at least start to try to repeal this and replace it with some free market alternatives.
So what do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Do you think Republicans should continue to try to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with free market alternatives, as Senator Lee just said? Or do you think they ought to work with Democrats and make some modifications to the Affordable Care Act to make this policy the best it can be? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Burdette Loomis, professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He worked for Kathleen Sebelius when she was governor of Kansas. He was also a graduate of UW-Madison. We'll get more into the politics of the Affordable Care Act, but Annalisa in Green Bay has been waiting for a while. Hi, Annalisa.
Hi. Maybe I'm backtracking a little bit here in the discussion, but for some time I've been wondering, who is Kathleen Sebelius? I mean, I felt that she was not visible at all, even before the rollout, in terms of selling the Affordable Care Act, and I think that was a big failing on the part of the Obama administration. And then when I read about the disaster that the rollout was in Time magazine and how they had to bring in these people to save it, I was just appalled. And so I wondered, I understand she comes from a political family. She was a governor. Everyone seems to like her. But I don't see her as having a lot of punch, a lot of presence when I have seen her on television. So maybe you could help me with that. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Professor Loomis?
That's a very astute observation. And I think that, first of all, Kathleen Sebelius is the daughter of John Gilligan, former governor, former House member from Ohio, a prominent Cincinnati political family. She's married to Gary Sebelius, who was the son of a congressman from western Kansas. And so she has, you know, a lot of political lineage. She won first a state house seat and then a insurance commissioner seat here, which is a statewide office. So she was elected twice insurance commissioner and then twice governor, Democrat, moderate Democrat in a Republican state, which is no mean feat. So I think she has some really substantial political skills, and I think she's very much committed to policy, particularly health and education policy. That said, she then moves to a far larger national scene. And remember, she was a second choice. Tom Daschle, the former Senate Majority Leader, was the first choice of Obama to be HHS Secretary. And he was very much wired into the Washington political scene, certainly a prominent figure. He had some private issues. He decided not to pursue it. And so Kathleen was the second choice. I think that it was a big step. I think her first year was really problematic in her trying to get a hold of that large organization. Then I think as she became comfortable, helped pass Obamacare, she was pretty comfortable. And I think the last year proved very, very difficult. And in many ways, she worked hard at it. Probably, if you listen to Kathleen on the air, probably not the greatest natural speaker that you'd have. One-to-one in groups, I think a very effective salesperson, perhaps not so much in national media. And certainly she was part of a team. A lot of this was run out of the White House, the whole Obamacare operation. And so she was a part of a team, both in developing it, passing it, and then implementing it. So I think she gets some of the credit, some of the blame, but it's also a team operation. And your listener is correct that I don't think that Secretary Sebelius might have had quite the flash that, say, Senator Daschle might have had in selling this.
Yeah. Is her political future? Does she have a political future?
I think that we've probably seen, unless there was, and she, unless she was appointed to something in a subsequent Democratic administration, I think that Kathleen's probably not going to have any political future. I think that we will see her pop up again, whether it's running a large nonprofit or a trade association, doing something in academia. I think she's very active. She's very energetic. I think she has a lot of good ideas and years left to contribute in one way or another. But certainly even coming back to, I don't think that she will come back to Kansas and run for anything. That's pretty much out of the picture. So I think that we'll see her in Washington, as we've seen many, many former legislators, former cabinet secretaries. But in terms of elective office, probably not.
Well, let's talk about the comments we just heard from Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah, telling Fox News's Greta Van Susteren last week that there will be at least a partial repeal of Obamacare if Republicans win big this fall. Is he right?
I'm not sure what that means. You know, I think that this is such a complex piece of legislation that there's no question there will be tinkering with it for some time to come. And I think that's a political a kind of statement that, they've talked about repeal, 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 repeal. Now they're moving to talk about modifications in various ways. And so they say, well, we'll repeal and replace some of it, blah, blah, blah. There are already a lot of free market principles in this. There are marketplaces. I was just reading about the New York marketplace. 16 different insurance companies, you know, a very vigorous marketplace in New York. Probably less competition other places. And competition where in which the packages are roughly comparable, which they never have been before in health care. So in a sense, I think that the political problem for Republicans here is that unless they have an ability to overcome a presidential veto, which means two-thirds of both houses, they aren't going to be able to repeal Obamacare or even make big changes. Now, I do think that Obama, I think the Democrats would be open to some negotiations, perhaps on the individual mandate, which not many people like at all. You might be able to work around that. There are various issues here, no questions, that could be negotiated out if everyone agreed that it was probably going to stay in place. If you just have the rhetoric of repeal, and we'll see if what happens after the 2014 elections, then I think it just is, you know, kind of business as usual and gridlock in D.C.
Yeah, and how huge will the issue of Obamacare be in leading up to the midterms, the 2014 congressional elections?
You know, that's what's so great about elections is in a sense, elections are hypotheses, and you get to test those hypotheses. It sounds kind of academic, but it's really the hypothesis that Obamacare is very unpopular, and that there's still a lot of mileage to be gained by attacking Barack Obama and Obamacare and Kathleen Sebelius and that whole package. That may well be true. It was certainly true in 2010 in spades. Not so much true in 2012. We're getting to the end of the Obama era. He's a lame duck. 2014 will probably be, in many ways, the swan song of the serious, concentrated attack on Obamacare. 2016 will be off to new issues, new candidates. So I think Republicans think there's still a lot of mileage to be gained. I think many Democrats, at least with their fingers crossed, hope that this enrollment surge and the fact that between Medicaid and Obamacare, 9 or 10 million people are new people are insured, and you have question you have you can't be denied insurance for pre-existing conditions, things of that nature may make this as we go to the election more popular. But I think right now, you'd have to say that the Republicans probably have the better of it on the politics, even though the policy seems to be improving.
We will get to more of your phone calls in just a moment as we are talking about the election year politics of the Affordable Care Act and the future policy of the Affordable Care Act. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with our guest who once worked for Kathleen Sebelius when she was governor of Kansas. Burdette Loomis is a professor of political science at the University of Kansas. About her resignation, about her successor, about the election year politics of Obamacare, and we are welcoming your questions for him and your views on whether this is and should be a big issue in this election year. Do you agree or not with Republicans who continue to want to repeal the Affordable Care Act? Jim in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good morning. What I'm wondering is, first of all, with 30 million people still projected to not have insurance 10 years out because of this, I think if the new person who takes Kathleen Sebelius' place enforces the law as it's meant to be, which is those people pay a tax, and it goes up incrementally. I think this year is only $65, but it goes up quite a bit. They need to make sure that they don't do selective enforcement. If they're going to, they need to tell the president, actually, although the Republicans, according to your guest, have tried to vote to repeal it 50 times, the president has changed it over and over and over again, granting waivers at anybody's request. He enforced the tax immediately on the flexible spending accounts. Not a doubt, not a waiver, not an extension of 2 weeks, 3 weeks. He just said, you will pay this tax now. If they've got a tax in place, and don't forget, this is a law, and he claims 7 million people is a success for obeying the law, that's a little bit hard to understand.
Yeah. Professor Loomis?
I think that you hit one of the real issues of Obamacare right on the head there, that this whole question of taxation, the individual mandate with the tax requirement, is something that has given, I think, even Democrats some problems. To make this work fiscally, to make it work in terms of policy, I think you had to have that tax hammer, or that's at least the argument that Obama and his colleagues made. But as this goes into effect, and really it's affecting mostly younger people, trying to herd them into some kind of insurance program. They're not insured in larger numbers right now. I do think that this is going to be, as it unfolds, one of the issues that Republicans will keep hitting at, that this is a new tax. I suspect it will be enforced. And then the question is, what does that do politically? And as I suggested before, I think this is one of the places where there may well be some modification if they can find a way to finance the program. But as we have seen in recent days, with CBO estimates, we get various changes in projections in terms of the money that's going to be saved or cost by Obamacare going out. Right now it's looking like it's going to save us more money. But those are really just kind of very, very vague projections in many ways. So I think that we will have Obamacare to kick around, to modify, for some years to come, much as we've had Medicare D, the drug program for Medicare, enacted in 2003. It's still being modified, and it was modified further in the Affordable Health Care Act. So none of these programs are static, and if there's a political situation, say the Republicans gain control of the Senate, have the House, you have Obama, it may look like Hillary Clinton's going to win the presidency, you might see some real negotiation here in trying to put together something that would modify Obamacare. So I think it's an ongoing issue, and Jim makes the good point that this is one issue, one place where there may well be some changes.
So if we have President Hillary Clinton, or if we have President Jeb Bush, I'm just making that up.
Right.
How might the Affordable Care Act be different under, I mean, does it go away if a Republican president is elected?
I think it will be very difficult for the Affordable Care Act to go away completely. There are too many people have gained a fair amount from gaining insurance, being insured at a reasonable rate, what have you. I think we're going to see the rates here overall have come down, not in every instance. But you also have to think that you would need, unless you change the filibuster rules, 60 Republicans in the Senate, or just about 60, to repeal or severely modify Obamacare, even with a Republican president. That's probably not going to happen. I think if you have a Democratic president, and clearly the most likely one would be Hillary Clinton. In many ways, that seals the fate of the Affordable Health Care Act as being part of American policy. Now, it doesn't seal the fate of what it's going to look like at all. Again, it's subject to modification, to massaging in one way or another, maybe finding ways to ensure more people, to be sure. One hopes it would be, you could simplify it. One hopes you could find ways to save more money with Medicare. There are lots of things that, are ongoing. But it's pretty well institutionalized right now. And even many Republicans don't want certain things to go away, like the guarantees that you can't be denied for pre-existing conditions. So we'll just have to see. Everyone's crystal ball here, I think, is pretty hazy.
Very, very briefly, because we hear this argument all the time, that Obamacare was built to fail, it's going to collapse, and it's going to turn into single payer. Is that going to happen?
Every country, every industrialized country in the world comes to its own broad health care policy in its own way. Sometimes it's in a flash, as occurred in England. Sometimes it's over a long time, as in Germany with Bismarck, on and on. I think the United States often does things in the most difficult kinds of ways. I don't think we'll ever get to single payer, but we might get to something where you'd have several large insurance companies really dominating the field and essentially coming to insure everybody in one way or another, making it a more rational system than what we have at present. I just think that we would have a very hard time calling anything single payer in this country. But large insurance consortiums have developed, producing pretty much the same policies with some competition, I think that's very possible.
Just a minute to go. Just short term, in terms of the Affordable Care Act and the confirmation hearings of Sylvia Matthews Burwell. How's that going to go?
Your guess is as good as mine, really. But I think if we know anything, we're going to have the Senator Mike Lee, who you just mentioned, the Ted Cruz's, doing their grandstanding. We'll have Democratic senators defending Ms. Burwell, saying that we've had success, we're beginning on to succeed with implementation, we want to keep it going. And I think at the end of the day that there will be votes against her, mostly based on just opposition to the Affordable Health Care Act. But I think they'll let her name go through. I think she'll be confirmed, and I do think that she will probably lower the temperature a little bit because she's not the lightning rod that Secretary Sebelius was.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Burdette Loomis, professor of political science at the University of Kansas. He worked for Kathleen Sebelius when she was governor of Kansas. He's also a graduate of UW-Madison. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. Thanks to Robin Cherry for on-air production. And thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction.